Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to Smirchpod Royale, a podcast celebrating all the Bond films and Bond-related films, and let's be honest, other films as well, by those who enjoy, hate, or, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Rain. This is another of our special compilation episodes, where we delve into the archives for the best bits of Smirch's gone by, cut out the libelous bits, and package them together for you like the best pick and mix you've ever had. We've even used plastic tongs and a little share cup. This time round, we'll be setting our sights on 2022. Over the next 45 minutes, you'll hear from a Welshman impersonating a Scotsman pretending to be a Russian, tales of a watery grave for a Jedi Master, and the return of everybody's favourite reptile-based trio. But let's kick off with a pocket full of kryptonite, a little Spin Doctors reference there for the kids. In a minute, Johnny Candon on Superman 4 and Supergirl, but first of all, Bizarro himself, Paul Ditchfield, on Superman 3.
With a lot of Richard Pryor in films, how much he just relies on not actually saying words, just sounds. He just seems to resort in all these sort of mad O's and R's, which is infinitely amusing.
He can't hold a job.
He cannot hold a job, which means he's a wastrel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Grotbags tells him off. Not the actress who plays Grotbags, but she looks like it.
No, I shared some scampi with her once in Butlin's Minehead.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
With Grotbags, not this woman.
With Grotbags, yeah. Grotbags herself. She wasn't in Grotbags regalia.
No.
I was. And she went something like, "Do you know what? I'm Grotbags." And I was like, couldn't give a shit with my eyes.
It's a bit rude that you said that.
With my eyes.
Yeah. Was it like that bit in Raiders of the Lost Ark? You closed them and it said, couldn't give a shit.
And she emailed. This is my problem, because right from the bat, we are told that Richard Pryor is a loser.
Mm.
And yet, he seems to have infinite capacity to be a genius.
So on the way out, he asks a brother for a match. His words, not mine.
Yeah.
And on the match, it says, earn big money, become a computer programmer.
Big money.
It doesn't say instantly become the best computer programmer in the world.
It doesn't say come up with a random idea that due to good luck more than diligence pays off and then be able to just be like the most amazing computer scientist engineer that's ever lived.
No, it doesn't say that.
Like, you know, there's a weather satellite, yeah. Can you make it change weather? No, that's impossible. Yeah, but you can do it. Yeah, all right, I think I can. I'll
give it a go.
Yeah. And why there? Do you want to build the biggest supercomputer there's ever been? Yeah, I'll give that a go as well.
Yeah.
How do you want to turn it off? With a Smartie on the end of a pin. All right, if that's what you want.
Can I tell you my favourite bit of IMDb trivia I saw about this sequence? The blind man's seeing eye dog takes off after another dog, causing all the trouble in the beginning. This is taking liberties for the sake of comedy, as seeing-eye dogs are specifically trained to ignore other dogs in the performance of their duties.
Bloody hell.
I mean, who wrote that?
Barbara Woodhouse.
Yeah.
You're sort of already right from the bat derailing any sense of drama or sort of respect for the genre.
Yeah.
Sort of right from the bat. Yeah. Everything's... And like bird shit gags and just blind people falling into holes.
Blind people thinking that a road marking thing is their dog.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas you'd immediately go, I can't remember my dog having a fucking metal handle. So you'd immediately realise. Don't your other senses compensate?
I think they're supposed to.
Not with this bloke.
No, his dog suddenly weighs half a ton.
Half a ton. And his paws are on rollers. And he's made of metal.
Superman, those movements are sort of like a kind of... they're almost an allegory, if I'm using that properly, for growing up. Like childhood's end. You know, when you're a kid, you've got a favourite uncle who's really fun. Mm. And then by the time you're an adult, you realise he's just a bit of an old drunk.
Yeah.
And that's Superman 4. So Superman and I go back, basically, in that Superman the movie was the very first film I was taken to see in the cinema.
And
when I was like 5. And I'm adopted. So I turned around to my mum. Basically, when little baby Superman and his willy lift up the truck, you know. And I turned around to her in the cinema. I went, oh, he's like... Because they explained to me from the age of zero, basically, that, you know...
You were from Krypton.
Yeah. They just stand me by a window and go, go on, you can do it. You can do it. And I sort of kind of got the idea generally, but I was very small, I was 5, and I turned to my mum in this cinema, packed cinema, and I went, oh, I'm that Superman, in that they're not his real parents, but they love him. Aww. And she cried because she realised that she'd adopted somebody who talks during movies.
This is one I watch sort of recreationally now and then, because it's one of those films for me that the 10-year-old me went to see at the cinema.
Right.
I still have that sense of excitement and magic embedded in it, even though I know it's crap.
Yeah. See, that was Superman 3 for me. I went to see Superman 3, and I came out just going, oh my God, I mean, eat shit, Godfather. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's probably cool in my head to slag it off as well. That's probably how you got girls.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But going into a disco, Superman 4 is a load of rumble, and they're like, give me your cock.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So,
a lad over there is talking about Police Academy 4. He's scoring loads of chicks.
Oh, you're as stubborn as your father. It's like, I just don't want to sell the fucking thing for flats. Get it into your head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
I want a real farmer working here.
In 1987.
There won't be any real farmers anymore, Clark. That's progress.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know.
He sounds like Brexit. Today.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, he'd have voted for Brexit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Politics, so would Clark. Yeah. He said he doesn't believe in progress. He literally says that.
He could spin the world backwards and change it all back to the good old days.
Yeah. Suddenly Mr. Hornby's got like platform shoes on.
But that's the only change. That's literally the only change.
Everything else is exactly the same.
Not a stitch else has changed if you're wearing massive platform shoes.
Gee, thanks, Clark.
I didn't like that modern world, but here we are, living the dream.
Is John Lennon still dead? Yeah. But good, Mr. Hornby's got platform shoes. Look at him go.
She sort of plays Kara as if she's a little bit stoned or a bit drunk or something.
A bit drunk,
You know what I mean? She's wandering around Argo City, which just looks like the inside of a huge shopping centre. It's just lots of corridors.
Peter O'Toole's just got this sort of dildo that makes things, and he's just wandering around making weird things.
And you think in a finite amount of space, like it is quite a small place. Mm. If some fucker was walking around building things, you'd be like, all right, do you want to just knock that on the head now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We can't fit. He's going, I'm going to do another tree. It's fine. We don't know what trees are. Stop making them. And, but she sort of, she walks through a school at one point. She just walks through a class and goes, oh, sorry. And the teacher's like, it's all right. You know, it's like she's the village idiot.
Yeah.
They're all just a bit used to her. It's like, oh, here comes Kara. You know, hi, Kara. She looks great in the Supergirl costume. Mm. It's a lovely costume. But then she does this odd thing. She picks up a rock and just squishes it.
Mm.
To show how strong she is now. Like, I mean, to show the viewer how strong she is now. Mm. And you think, well, I'm glad she didn't land in a fucking crash. Do you know what I mean? This blonde woman came in and started squishing the babies. It's a fucking bloodbath, you know? It's like, she was dressed like Superman.
That's weird.
So she does that, and then she uses her heat vision to make a daisy open.
Mm.
And all that sort of stuff. And then you're going, ah, this is nice.
She does a fart and a bloke in a little dinghy goes 300 miles an hour.
Just flows over a mountain.
Into a volcano and dies.
Yeah, he's dead. And she's like, ooh.
Ooh, those Argo beans.
Yeah, she flicks a bogey and just causes 9/11.
Also, I like the trivia for this film. It was like, the producers asked Christopher Reeve. So I imagine them going, of course, you'll appear in our Supergirl film. And he's gone, no, I've done Superman 3 and that's it. Thank you very much.
Because that was the thing, wasn't it? Wasn't it meant to be, hadn't he done Superman 3 and said, I'm done now.
Yeah.
That's me out.
Yeah.
And then, oh God, if only you'd done it, Christopher. I mean, it's like Superman 4. Do I get a hand in the story? Yeah, but I mean, that's not going to be any good. So they could, I mean, he should have done Supergirl as a sort of a handover. And then, I don't know, he goes, do you know what? I'm going to go to Argo City and meet all my old relatives. I'm going to leave Earth in your safe hands.
And I'm going to go and pick up the Argo catalogue.
Yeah, exactly. Look at a hairdryer for tenor. That's amazing.
Peter O'Toole comes by in a conveyor belt. I brought you little pencils, Kara.
Could you brush your teeth? No.
No. They've got whiskey down there. Bye. Of course, if you enjoyed those, you'd probably lap up something like, I don't know, Superbook, The World of Superheroes According to Smirchpod, now available at all great bookstores and Amazon. It wouldn't be Smirsh without Bond, of course, and nobody did it better in 2022 than these three. First, you'll hear Dan Thomas on Quantum of Solace, then joined by Dean Burnett on The World Is Not Enough, and topped off by the rubbish John Thompson with Diamonds Are Forever. Great. But there's a nice joke here that always makes me laugh, where she goes, 5 years he worked for me. She goes, I bought him an ashtray for his birthday or something, and then Bond goes, I don't think he smoked.
And maybe that's what turned him.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even smoke, and she bought me this. Love, look at this. She bought me this. And you know what? I'm gonna join a secret organisation. I am sick of this.
You know, his wife died of horrible cancer. Oh no, I didn't know that. Maybe I shouldn't have bought him those ashtrays.
And before she died, actually, he clubbed her to death with an ashtray. So this is bad.
Yeah, he's cross because Bond killed Mitchell, and it's like, well, what was he supposed to do?
Oh, I know. This is. I feel like
that's
this
the theme
a lot
of the film,
things.
Isn't it? Yeah.
There's a lot of things in this. Like, why'd you do that? He goes, you weren't there, love, right? You were chasing a cartoon bull or whatever, right? Why would you kill him? Because I had to kill him. You absolute twats.
He was firing a gun at me to kill me.
And according to the training that you gave me, shoot back, you said. So I done that.
Yeah. And now he's dead, and I don't regret it. We meet Tanner for the first time, played by Rory Kinnear.
Yeah, who I have a personal relationship with.
You have a personal relationship with him?
Yeah.
Go on, tell this story.
So, I may have mentioned it before, I'm not sure.
I don't think you have.
About, where are we now? About 14 years ago, I was on the ITV as a contestant daytime version of, it was called House Guest.
Oh, yeah.
But it was the daytime version of whatever that show is, Come Dine With Me, right?
Oh,
the
yeah.
twist was you had to stay overnight. Anyway, I was a contestant on it. Didn't go well. I won't go into it. But anyway.
You've never told me this story.
No. And Rory Kinnear did the narration. And months later when I'm watching it, he is very sarcastic about me.
Is he? What did he say?
Well, basically, I had not prepared the food to a high standard. And I don't remember exactly what he said. I just remember him being a little bit sneering about me.
So when you say you've got a personal relationship, you mean you have some sort of vendetta against him?
Yeah, he probably doesn't remember me, but no, I remember him.
The Bond has been passed for active duty, noting exceptional stamina. You wouldn't put that, would you?
She, like, her Moneypenny have a bit of a... Moneypenny gives her some shit, doesn't she?
She slut-shames her.
Yeah, so it's her shit. But again, that's like, so Bond's quite happy to have sex with a doctor, but not Moneypenny, and like...
I just don't. Do we think they actually have done it? We've never seen them do it.
I think they might have done it once, and it was both a bit awkward, so they're just avoiding talking about it.
But she's not. She brings it up every time.
Yeah, so does he.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the one time he couldn't get it up.
Oh. Mm. Now that's a whole movie.
Yeah.
Oh,
Bond's lost his mojo.
To answer earlier question, the erection reflex is a lot of space in the spine, so he might actually still be able to. Just won't feel anything. So.
But how he might not be able to get aroused because he can't feel her, touching his balls and that.
Yeah, but a lot of guys get aroused and just sat on a bus. It just happens sometimes.
Yeah, but that's because you can feel it wobbling.
Yeah, but you can feel it, but the lower half of your body can feel it. Like the nerves are reacting to the vibrations. And without your brain getting involved. So he probably maybe can get it up, but he probably wouldn't be able to do anything with it because he can't feel it. So,
what does it say about being shot up the arsehole?
Further research required.
Yeah, that's the exact opposite of Dean's speciality, to be fair.
That's true, exactly, yeah.
She went, well, you know, she could imagine, what's this obsession with diamonds, you see? Mm. And they, apparently, John Barry said to her, diamonds, it's a metaphor. Think of penises when you're singing it.
Right.
And this is not genuine. Yeah. I've heard this.
Yeah.
And that's, she nailed it after that.
Definitely. What does that say about her?
Well, she's a non-materialistic sex lover.
Well, aren't we all?
Can I just point something out here? So, being a fan of Bond, I when I became a student in Manchester, I decided to dress up and start going to casinos. Little did I know, it was full of Chinese people in shell suits eating chicken at the table. And I was horrified.
I bet.
In a three-piece suit and shiny shoes because I'd watched Bond. And I was Bond that night. And not only that, I'd quite a good win on blackjack, tipped the croupier. The pit boss was called, and I was asked to leave the table because tipping in the UK is soliciting.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Yeah.
You should have done your Roger Moore voice.
Oh, dear. It's something of a travesty.
So they get
I always like, I love like when I come during the day in my house because I don't drink anymore.
Yeah.
I'd like to proffer people a Vimto bottle and go, something from our extensive cellars.
My favourite, of course, is I now have a rifle aimed precisely at your groin. So speak now or forever hold your peace. Before that as well, we've got an elephant playing a fruit machine. And it does that unless if it doesn't want to be beaten with sticks.
I love that. And the fact that it hits the jackpot and and guess what the sign is? It's three elephants.
Yeah, and you know what? No one's asked. So if I was in a casino and an elephant came in and won the jackpot, I'd have a look, but the elephant almost is looking around going, what do you think about that? And absolutely no one's asked.
No one's looking. It's just actually looking for the next stick that it's going to be hit with. Then he goes in expecting to meet the elusive, mysterious Willard White.
Yes.
And this is where Cubby Broccoli's dream comes in.
Yep.
Thinks it's Willard. He turns around and there's Charles Gray.
Yeah.
But not one.
Not one.
Oh, no. Buy one, get one free. I say, you buy one, you get one free, just like him. I say, what do I say? You buy one, you get one free. Blofeld, Dad. 0800 106 107. Now! It's the Blofeld double deal. The Blofeld double deal is now. Yeah. The bomb is revealed. Yeah. Sean ties the bomb to his tails of his jacket and pulls his hands between his legs, and he goes, ooh! And all you need is June, because he looks exactly like Terry Scott.
He really does.
At this point.
And when he pulls his hands up, you should have got a...
a swanny whistle!
Yeah.
Yeah, and over he goes, and kaboom.
Wasn't a long time ago. But Star Wars was. It literally says here at the start of all the films. Here's Tom Crowley with his thoughts on The Last Jedi and, poor chap, The Rise of Skywalker.
So she gets in the Millennium Falcon and flies off.
Yep.
And then Luke thinks, well, like a drunk uncle, well, I'm going to go and fucking burn everything down then. So he goes to the Jedi tree with a big fire.
Yeah,
and then Yoda turns up and is like,
"What's the whole point of fucking like the character of Yoda is that he's this sort of little unassuming Buddha-like kind of old guy, and like, and you think, oh, this sort of little mischievous gremlin isn't any sort of great Jedi master, like, you know, he is.
He's basically That's Ronnie Corbett.
He's like Ronnie Corbett. It's like if Ronnie Corbett was the Archbishop of Canterbury." And we'd all like to see that. The one thing I have an issue with is that a Force ghost hits someone. And I went, oh, is that possible? But I guess it is. The Force can affect things physically. So
what I'd like to have seen in that scene, when he hits Luke on the head with that stick, because Luke's still really angry, I'd like to stand up and punt him over the fucking cliff.
Biff him off the edge. Yeah.
And then he'd be like, oh, shit, he probably had something really wise to say.
Yeah, I've really... shouldn't give in to my anger like this.
Oh,
he was right about that chain of
anger. I haven't seen him in ages as well. I just kicked him into the sea.
Sorry. Yeah.
I'm thinking every day Luke wakes up, walks past the cliff, and he just sees Yoda floating face down in the sea.
A blue glowing Yoda. So Force Ghosts can hit people and they need to breathe as well. It's been established.
So sad. People who've been listening to this podcast long enough will realise that I tend to go off on tangents when I don't really want to talk about the film.
Yeah.
As we just did there. But we're going to get back on track because we're greeted with the opening crawl that says, "The dead speak."
Yep.
And then it goes, oh, and Palpatine's back. What?
Yeah. The most important plot point, arguably, is just thrown away in the opening titles. I was thinking about this, and like, there is a balance to that, right? Because from the very first movie, really seismic important events are explained in the title crawl. But when you've just gone, you know, Emperor Snoke and like Rey's parentage and all, and Kylo Ren's redemption and all those other things we've been talking about all this time. Well, don't worry too much about that. The main thing is we got a drive time radio show from Emperor Palpatine.
This one goes out to Anita, who's going out tonight in Stoke. Have fun, Anita. Here's Rita Ora.
And they're going, oh no, Palpatine's back and he's playing some absolute stinkers.
So Palpatine is Simon Bates.
Yeah, that's right.
The opening crawl should be one of those things that, you know, when they get like a million billion photos and they make a picture out of their photos. It should be that when you look at the crawl from front to end, it makes a picture of Rian Johnson being punched in the face or something.
I thought you were going to say just a hand extending a middle finger. What better visual metaphor for the entire film than Luke's battered, moss-covered, clapped-out old X-Wing being listlessly dredged out of the ocean one last time?
What I love about that is, A, inside it'll be really wet and horrible and smell bad.
She sits on there just...
Yeah, and it's just be full of like weird fish and crustaceans and all sorts.
And mold and different.
And she's
mosses.
Also got his helmet.
Yeah,
where'd she get that from?
Yeah, I don't know. How does it fit her as well? She's got a much smaller head.
Much smaller head. It would be like a little child putting on one.
Oh, that's cute.
That is quite cute.
Another thing that might have added some character to the character of Rey.
Yeah.
There's too much bloody lore and new characters every 5 seconds.
So then Ben immediately gets thrown down a hole.
Yeah.
And Rey is like struggling, and then she hears the voices of past
all
Jedi.
The voices, many of which are very samey. I recognise Ewan McGregor, and then when it's like Hayden Christensen's voice is so forgettable and indistinct that they had to have him say, "Bring balance," like I did. Mm. And you go, "Oh wait, that's
like
meant
me.
To be Hayden Christensen."
Hayden Christensen,
like me.
I played Anakin Skywalker.
But if they had like, they have got Yoda, obviously you know who that is. Luke, sure. Ewan McGregor, fine. If Samuel Jackson was there, you would know who that was. But as it was, it's just like some voices, and it just doesn't become clear.
Good
who
if one of them was
recognize.
David Jason. Ray, David you Jason. Plonker. Yeah, you dipstick.
But he comes in as Count Dookula.
Mm.
Igor! And then you go, oh, no, that is. That's Count Dookula.
Oh, ducky poos.
Nanny comes in. He's like, oh, Nanny, I'm busy talking to Ray.
How did Nanny injure her arm, anyway?
We never find out.
No. Terrible storytelling in Dookula.
I know, it's awful. We're just meant to accept, are we? We're just meant to accept that Nanny's broken her arm. We never find out
why.
Do
we don't know.
God, Rian Johnson,
I think she jumped in front of a staking.
Yeah, I think probably. She saved Dookula. She's actually the greatest hero in the Dookula universe.
She is.
We just never find out.
Yeah.
Oh!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Ooh.
Back down to earth now, for a trio of classics covering the 70s, 80s and 90s. You'll hear Dan Thomas on The Hunt for October, Paul Litchfield on Star Trek The Motion Picture, but first up, The Game is Afoot, with Paul Gannon and young Sherlock Holmes.
And then Watson goes, oh, by the way, I've also figured out something. And Holmes goes, what? And he goes, well, El Tar is Wraith backwards.
Thank God his name wasn't Turt Nook. Because that would have made it really hard for him to get a job in a school, a very classy school. I know it was an obvious joke,
it's
but
good,
I really...
though. I enjoyed it.
When am I ever going to get the chance to do that kind of crap ever again?
Never. And I like this bit because the script goes, well, Chris Columbus obviously thinks, shall I go through the scene of Holmes explaining it to them? No. Mm. We'll get Michael Horden back in. He goes, hope.
It sounds like every now and then he's doing his own story in his head. Just, and I remember recording Paddington. No, we're doing no. Holmes right now. Oh yes.
I was badgering Wind in the Willows around the time.
I'm doing an advert for Revels tomorrow. All right, Mike.
I'm going to feed all of them up my bumhole. What?
I push a little peanut up and it comes out a treat. That old gag.
Fucking hell. I haven't heard that for a long time. I mean, when you think, when did treats stop being a thing? About 1985?
Yeah, you're blaming him for the downfall of treats because they found out it was a factory full of old men having peanuts put up their bottom. They're squeezing them out.
Oh, God, men's and men's. Bags. That's what M&M stands for.
And they're all strapped down like it's a battery farm. Can you imagine? Just a trough. They're eating constantly out of a trough of Werther's Originals.
Well, someone with a little rubber glove puts a peanut up their bum.
Yeah, it's their job. I don't know whose job's got it worse. Oh. Them or the guy who works the factory line.
Bentley Bobster, he's walking along and then he's like, oh, something on the little thing on the back of his neck.
Mm.
He doesn't know what it is.
Doesn't know.
But he's going to go and have, but God damn it, he's going to go and have his lovely pheasant bird game thing, whatever he's going to eat.
Yeah, whatever that is. I mean, I presume it's a pheasant, but...
It looks like, do you remember Thundercats?
Well, it looks like all the villains in it.
Yeah, the little eagle men, or yeah. Vulture men, look like one of them.
Yeah.
So he's eating his bird, and then the bird's like, ah, starts attacking him, which is, you know, quite scary if you're a little child.
It was very scary, and that's what I miss about 80s kids' films with horror elements, is that these days, they kind of dance around it. But back in the 80s, like, who gives a fuck? Throw that terror bird in.
Yeah.
See how they like that.
Yeah, get a cake in someone's face.
Yeah, just whatever it takes to absolutely destroy a child.
Have a cream horn teabag a child.
Is that a really good idea, Chris? Do you think that's appropriate? Oh, I was doing mescaline last night. I had the weirdest dreams and I was inspired.
Do you think this was like when Stephen King wrote the entire book of It on cocaine and had no memory of it? Chris Columbus wrote this on mescaline.
I think he did. I think that's the only... It's like he spent 2 weeks completely blackout whatever on it. Woke up and there was like 4 scripts.
Also, did you read who the script doctor was on this film?
No, who was it?
Geoffrey Archer.
See, here's the thing now with you. I never know what's a piss poor gag or what's an actual fact.
It's an actual fact.
Wow.
Yeah, he was brought in to kind of oversee that. I think maybe to sort of make the language more oldie English at times.
Well, that's something that comes up later, where there's a few phrases that don't work for me, and I don't know if it's just because it sounds out of place or whether it is because they've made that phrase up. But
hey,
yeah.
Watson, get me a cup of coffee.
That one.
Hey, Watson, where's the grits? I gotta get my grits and my pastrami sandwich before I quack the case.
So Holmes there, he's got a mentor who's called Rupert Waxflatter. He's an eccentric retired professor to whom the school has given a large attic space for inventions, as they would.
As they would. Yeah. Because how many, you know, fired teachers all get to live in the attic? Maybe there were a few up there. Maybe there's just like the attic space in that school was full of teachers.
Yeah. Inventing stuff.
Well, you'd hope so.
I call this the fleshlight.
It means there's no need for a lady. Which is great in this society.
As there's only one. And we don't go near her, do we? And Waxfat is like, no, you fucking don't.
I've invented the multi-fleshlight, which I've put onto the spokes of an old carriage wheel. Now seven men can stare at each other in the eye as they thrust against the fleshlight. And it rotates and plays, we'll be coming round the mountain the whole time.
I think it's best you stay in this attic forever.
You've been up there a bit too long, mate.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't give you my Welsh submarine, as it were.
Imagine a Welsh submarine.
Well, it's a coracle with another coracle glued on top of it.
Oh, yeah. Sounds quite simple. Oh, imagine what song you'd sing when you're under there. You'd be like, oh, let them sing.
Yeah. Just close harmony singing, good boys.
They do that. That one.
Yeah, that one Welsh choral song. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
Yeah.
They'd make a film out of you, like Fisherman's Friends, Submarine Pals.
Doesn't sound quite as hard-edged as Red October. John McTiernan's Submarine Pals. Film just off the coast of fucking Neath, which is landlocked, I just realised.
Yeah, because he's got to give a briefing to James L. Jones, and he says, look, the Russians have got this submarine. And James L. Jones takes off his headphone and goes, sorry, I was just listening to Wham, because it's 1984.
And he leaps over his desk. He's wearing a full shell suit.
Yeah. I'm just off to go and watch Ghostbusters. Do you want to come with me?
What was that gunshot noise? That was just the art department being shot. Because they went too far.
Yeah. Do you want to play Dragon's Lair? Will you stop?
I tell you what, instead of all this, let's just write on the front, it's set in 1984, okay? And scene.
He says, I think this is a caterpillar drive.
I will say this about this film. There's a lot of things that are decisions that are made quite quickly. Like, he's had a look at a picture of a submarine that's got two big doors on it. He goes, I'll tell you exactly what that is. Well, I mean, they could just be decals, mate.
Yeah.
I've just realised, it's either a magneto drive or it's a big sticker that says powered by fairy dust. But he goes, no, it's definitely caterpillar drive. And everyone goes, fair enough, then.
Just above that, I slow down for horses sign. Seahorses, sorry.
Seahorses, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They go quiet, but Jones can hear them singing. He's like, I think I can hear singing. And then Sam Neill's like, well, shouldn't we tell them to shut up, sir? And Connery looks around and goes, no, let them sing.
I have a question about this. Why does he let them sing? I always read that, but I could be wrong, as him wanting to leave a breadcrumb for any American sonar.
Oh, maybe. I just thought it was a morale thing.
Yeah, but
he's obsessed with morale, isn't he?
He is obsessed with morale, but he is going to chuck these people off the boat in about 2 days.
Yeah, but he's got an excuse lined up for that, hasn't he? He does a really bad fart.
It's essentially, yes.
Sorry, comrade, I've done a very bad fart. You'll have to leave on the emergency boat. It's fucking stinks in here. And that's your plan, is it? Yes. That's why you're eating boiled cabbage, is it? Yes.
That's right. We've been planning this for 2 years. I've been eating cabbage for 2 years in preparation for this.
Also, you should have sugar puffs. That makes you a wee smell funny too.
Also, it's fun to say when I say it. Sugar puffs.
Except they're not called that anymore.
What are they called now?
Honey Monster.
Well, that's shite.
It is shite. It feels like a sequel to Sugar Puffs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like when a band sequel.
Like there was Dirty Harry and then there was Magnum Force. So then Ramius and Sam Neill have a little chat about, where will you live when we get to America? Where are you going to live? And Sam Neill says, I would like to live in Montana and marry a large American woman who will cook rabbits for me.
It is very sweet.
I wish he'd survived and seen what the dating scene was like in Montana. Like, imagine sticking out on your Tinder.
Yeah.
Like, Greg with the heavy Russian accent, but he's had to change his name. He's like, I'm looking for a woman who will watch me shoot rabbits and then he'll cook them. And she has to be round.
Used to live in a large black thing full of semen. Now out on the dating scene and ready to meet.
Yeah. It is funny this scene, but I think if I had lost a submarine so close to a known defector and something was probably up, I wouldn't mention it to anyone.
No.
I would like, no, we've still got definitely all of our subs. None missing.
No, all good. So then Ryan and Ramius, they go up to the top of the sub as they arrive at the Jeep, the Penobscot River in Maine. And then Ryan's like, that island over there, me and my dad used to fish there. And Ramius is like, I couldn't give a shit. He doesn't say that.
Couldn't give a shit. And they cuts the credits.
Then Ray Reardon comes out there and he goes, that's all, folks.
Ray Reardon will return in Patriot Games.
Anyway, that's the hunt for October. What a joy to talk about.
That was lovely. It got a bit more snooker-based than I was anticipating.
I would never have guessed we'd be focused heavily on snooker, but we did. One of the greatest films ever made, and we talked about Ray Reardon more than Sean Connery. So Kirk says, well, where is Deckard? And everyone goes, he's in engineering.
He's engineering, of course.
So he goes down to see him. But before he does that, he pops in to see how the teleporting's going.
What?
Not going too well.
God. That's just the most disturbing scene in this entire film.
One of them being new Vulcan science officer Sonak.
One of the Sonak is only going, I couldn't imagine. And suddenly they both turn up half inside out.
I want to see them.
Screaming. They're screaming.
I'd like them to be, it'd be a plate of mints with fake teeth and eyes. Because they go, he goes, Kirk to enter.
And a pot noodle with a moustache. That's all that survived.
But after all this, we meet Lieutenant Ilya. And Decker's like,
come on, blimey! Yeah, and she's like, well, yes, we held hands once. Apparently, in the original script, Deltons can give off the most powerful sex pheromone that drives men crazy. Is that why when the first thing she says to Kirk is, I'm celibate?
Yes. I think that's it. Or maybe it's just because he's Captain Kirk.
Because he's Captain Kirk. She literally said, hi, reporting for duty. I'm celibate, by the way.
It's because if you extend the shot out, he's got a massive boner.
He's literally pushing the captain's chair down into a table position, like, putting stirrups on it. No, I'm celibate, Captain. Oh.
Cancel that sex swing order. So the system get overloaded. Meanwhile, the cloud's firing on them. And the Spock's like, I reckon it's trying to transmit something. I reckon if I transmit something, it's like it has to be read really quickly. You get the bloke from the Micro Machines adverts to do it.
Yes. Terms and conditions apply. Very much that.
And you get this very much, it feels like there's a scene like this in every film where Shatner's desperately in need of something to happen. So he's like, oh, and Spock, now Spock.
Anytime now.
And then eventually he sends it and the blast disappears.
It's great though, I love that bit.
It's that great bit where Decker goes, you said you wanted to hear it, you know, I'm your officer, I have to give you another opinion. And Shatner goes, that's true. You're right.
Only Shatner can deliver those lines.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? He puts full stops where there aren't full stops.
A probe appears on the bridge.
Oh, I love this bit so much. Oh, it's frightening as fuck.
It's terrifying.
It's so jarring. Mm. It's so loud. Mm. It's really like they amplify that. And I love the fact it's just a column of lightning going around looking at shit.
It's a bit like the Tasmanian devils come on board.
Yes, it really is. It's mental.
And Decker's like, don't interact with it. Just he's basically, he treats it like it's a wasp. Just stay still.
Just,
it won't go away.
It won't bother anyone. Yeah. Even Chekhov's trying to put it under a glass. Now that won't work. That
it's hovering over Spock's chips. Get that off.
Over Kirk's pint of cider he's got.
Get off. Just ignore it. He flies into the, he tries to do a mind meld, but of course, because there's so much power and so much information, it nearly kills him.
Yeah, but first he goes to the most trippiest, beautiful sequence ever, doesn't
he? It's very 2001, isn't it?
Which was their raison d'etre. They were like, we must make it look a bit like that, or Close Encounters. But it's so beautiful. It's amazing. And it just adds to the madness of it all. What the fuck is this? The bit where he's like, I'm seeing like all the planets that this V'ger has made carbon copies of, that is collected in its database.
He says, I've just watched every episode of Campion.
Every episode of Fresh Fields and French Fields. And then I must mind meld with Julian McKenzie.
I got Anton Rogers.
Also, the aperture that they go through is a big Metalanus. It's a big Metalanus.
Yeah, and also that the V'ger itself, when it goes moving, looks like a big doll.
It looks beautiful. It's so beautiful.
But they realise when they get close to it that you have to, a human has to be on hand to do it, because the cables have kind of been trimmed, or they need to be put together like a hot wire situation.
Two cables have been severed maybe during its flight or whatever. And I love the way that V'ger is talking with just electricity noises.
It's the teacher from Charlie Brown. And that's nearly it from this special Best of 2022 compilation. If you've liked this, why not subscribe, write us a review, follow us on Patreon, follow us in the street, actually no, don't do that. Maybe even buy Superbook, Exploderbook and Thunderbook. Other books by different authors are available with different names, but they aren't as good or as cheap. Whatever you choose to do though, I'm very grateful. We'll leave you with one final 2022 Megamix, where I was again joined by fellow Snake Boys Toms Neenan and Crowley to probe Harry Potter's Chamber of Secrets and then finish off The Prisoner of Azkaban. Thanks for listening. Have a happy Christmas, have a happy New Year, and I'll see you in 2024. Goodbye.
Hermione goes, you hear a voice and then Mrs. Norris is petrified. That's a bit of a coincidence. And it's like, at Hogwarts, that's like saying, you ate some toast earlier and then a vicar exploded. anything can happen at the magic school.
Exactly. The painting goes, she's right, you know.
Exactly.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, well, true.
Yeah. I would have then thrown, I would have thrown ink at it or something.
Yeah.
Like, see how he likes
I'm
that.
I'm melting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have pissed in his face and he wouldn't have been able to leave.
No, he'd be like, ah!
Then he'd look like the guy in RoboCop that falls in the bath of acid for the rest of his life. Yeah, he's undead.
I'm in a permanent living hell.
He'd have called to the attention of a teacher and then he'd be like, what happened? And he'd be like, Pat Potter waits on me. Sorry, I can't hear what you're saying. Take this painting down, it's malfunctioned.
No,
put one up of
well
a hottie
know,
a pin-up girl.
As you well know, John, if that was drawn to the attention of a teacher, they'd go, no, it's probably fine, fuck it.
Yeah. Talking of minions, Crabbe and Goyle.
Yep.
Hello.
Minions. They see two hovering cakes. Oh, I'm going to eat them. Yum. This is not surprised the man got involved with riots.
They are holding so many cakes.
So many cakes.
And then they see two hovering cakes. And they're like, well, obviously we'll eat the hovering cakes first, without question.
Yeah.
And it's like the hovering cakes have like caviar on them or something. It's disgusting.
It looks awful, strange kind of goop,
But I love the fact they go for the hovering... They're not... think that's suspicious, the hovering cakes at all.
No. And they put them in the broomstick cupboard.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take a hair off both of them.
From the head?
From the head,
I
think.
Yeah.
I hope so.
I use the diary to manipulate Ginny to open the chamber and do all that, because I'm Slytherin's heir. Mm. And I am, and he writes his name, Tom Riddle.
And it's... No, I don't actually.
That's such a good actor.
I should have committed to... I'm sorry, I would have gone for a piss. I know.
But yeah, his name is Tom Malvolo Riddle.
Yeah.
Because they just needed, basically, they've got a bin of letters that they need to make that work.
Like a bag of Scrabble letters, and you've got that bit in the middle, and you're like, for fuck's sake. And you use Malvolo, the other person's like, that's not a word.
Yeah.
It is, it means redemptive.
Sure, that works, that'd be fine.
When he was writing out his full name in a sequence that takes, like, minimum 3 minutes to complete, why didn't Harry just, like, you know, like rabbit punch him in the kidney.
Yeah.
Down.
Kitchen like, balls.
Oh, just finished.
I wonder if his foot would have gone through him, because he's sort of a ghost from the past.
Luckily, a car turns up.
Yes.
That's fun. I like that. That's a good flying car.
Yeah, the car's alive. I forgot about that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, presumably it heard they were going to see the spiders, so it drove all the way from the Weasleys to there just in case.
It ran off on its own after the wanking tree smashed it.
Yeah.
And it dumped them out as if to say, well, thank you very much, and it flew off.
Mm. Just think it and just went and hid in the woods.
Maybe it just hid in the woods for a bit.
I want there to be a scene where it's flying through the air and it sees a pink car.
Oh, and nice. Then goes,
and then I go down to the woods.
Yeah.
And she opens her boot and he kind of goes up and then it's like...
That's nice. And then it has a race with a red car, but one eats a Milky Way. Yeah, so he's lighter. Yeah.
I've got a few more British gangster movie titles.
Please.
Okay. So, Blade Factory 6, The Slayer in Marbella.
Nice.
Loot and Groin Grinders.
Perfect.
Yeah.
The Who You Looking At Twat Pack 2, Two Twat Two Looking At.
Les Dennis is in that one, isn't he?
He is, yeah. He plays Uncle Nonce, the
that's a character.
The Godfather.
That is not an accusation. Right.
Dressed as a teddy boy.
Yeah.
And Piss Lads.
Piss Lads.
I'd go watch Piss Lads in an instant.
Right. Okay.
Is that Sean Bean Piss Lads?
That's no, that's actually the original Colin from Press Gang Piss Lads. Remade later with Sean Bean.
Yeah, so he's on the bus and then Stan's reading a newspaper which talks about Sirius Black.
Yes.
And then Harry's like, who's Sirius Black? And he's like, what do you mean who's Sirius Black? You fucking moke.
You fucking I'm fucking reading a newspaper. I don't look over my fucking shoulder. Get your own fucking paper, you piece of shit.
You come on my fucking bus, my tall fucking thin bus, and you come and talk to me like this, you piece of shit.
You have no respect, no fucking goddamn respect whatsoever. Get the fuck off this bus.
Dance, motherfucker.
Dance, motherfucker. Dance.
That doesn't happen, by the way.
No.
Stan just is like, what do you mean you've never heard of Sirius Black? He's only the first person to ever escape from Azkaban.
Yeah.
And he's a big supporter of new you-know-who. And I thought, oh, Jim Davison.
Yeah. He's back.
It's been set up previously in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
His last tour was called No Further Action, which is, if I'm going to do a tour, I want to name it after me gloating that people, I was being sued for like a sexual assault or something, and I'm no longer being sued for that. Yeah. And so I go, everyone, aren't I awesome? And everyone's like, okay.
I think I'd call mine Released Without Bail, just to make it seem extra creepy. Never address it, just leave people wondering what it is I did and got away with.
We also introduced the fact that Hagrid is now the new Care of Magical Creatures teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that the old one is retiring to spend more time with his remaining limbs, which I think is a good joke.
That's a good joke.
Yeah.
Also, justice for Hagrid, finally, after like in the last film, it turned out he should have just had a happy, normal life as a wizard, but was falsely accused of something when he was a child. And it's never been addressed.
There should be a Netflix series about him, like making a murderer.
Mm. Yeah.
About Hagrid.
Making a caretaker.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Mm. Yeah. That'd be good.
I burnt him in a ditch. But it wasn't me.
I shouldn't have said that.
I shouldn't have said that.
That's a bit like...
I missed that. When's that coming back? That's basically those tapes of Peter Sutcliffe, isn't it? Like accidentally confessing to murder after murder.
Maybe there was the Wearside Hagrid who set a tape in.
Right.
I'm Hagrid. I see you had no luck catching me, Jack. It were me who opened the Chamber of Secrets. I mean, it was clearly Hagrid. No. Someone with a northeastern accent. So anyway, enough of that.
We'll be right back.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.